Namaste. So in this series on reconciliation of opposites, there is a very interesting question today to reconcile between selfishness and self-giving. Normally, of course, we take as opposite selfishness and selflessness. But quite naturally, the question comes from a different ground of being. That's spiritually, the mother speaks about self-giving. And self-giving in love is the, for love, the only expression is self-giving, ultimately. So how to reconcile that with selfishness? And it can take many forms. For instance, it can take the form of self-respect. If somebody is disrespecting you, insulting you, should you just give in because you have to give yourself, and so on and so forth, right? These are some of the issues which come up. So we can understand, first of all, everything. Like, for example, when we use the word selfishness, what do you mean by it? So there is a selfishness which where a person only thinks about oneself. And obviously that is, Shobindo says there are only two things which he says I cannot pardon, which I find the worst evil, and that is selfishness and meanness, two sins. And then he says, but these are also so universal that one can pardon them. So selfishness and meanness are at one pole of existence. Selfishness, ordinarily we mean that a person is only thinking about oneself, one's own advantages, benefits, etc. So is it bad to be selfish? Why is it bad to be selfish, if at all? Well, selfishness in the beginning stages of evolution is a necessary mechanism that, you know, it's because of the ego in the play. So just like ego serves a purpose, so selfishness serves a purpose. It is to preserve the individuality. If somebody prematurely is saying, I am going to practice selflessness, it doesn't mean that one becomes a football to anybody and everybody. For example, selflessness doesn't mean that whatever anybody tells me, I'll do because I'm selfless. It doesn't mean that at all. So, selfishness in the beginning stage of evolution has its own place in the process. But as we grow upward, the sign of an evolving humanity is we become less and less selfish. We start expanding. First we think about family, then about community, then about maybe the clan, then still larger nation, world, human beings, creation. So that's how we start moving out of selflessness. Now when we start doing it, does selfishness still have a place? Well, naturally, because that is the nodus from which everything is expanding. So no selflessness can be at an expense where the person himself is finished. So there is something called as a justified self-defense at every level. For example, if somebody, we have the story of Raja Shivi, so that's an extreme example where he gives his own life to save a dove. Now one can go to that extent, no doubt about it. But then that's not what we are here for, especially in the context of integral yoga. Yes, that would be an extreme form of selflessness given in one life, like altruism, like harakiri, like people who give themselves completely and even give their life. These Japanese people started this where they give their life to save their country. Now this is one example of selflessness, and it's a very noble instinct, no doubt, where for the larger good you are giving yourself. But all these are ignorant forms, yet they will bear their fruits. Any person, for whatever reason, sacrifices himself for a larger good, a greater good, is something which is not a simple act. And we should not compare this with suicide bombers, for God's sake. They are different category. They are brainwashed people. They are politically motivated. And it's a different thing altogether. Money is involved. So it's not exactly selflessness where in the name of God they are sacrificing themselves. It's a play of falsehood. But I am not going into that. But ordinarily, we need to have a certain degree of self-defense, even as a yogi. So we have the story of Sri Ramakrishna where he said that a snake that don't bite, but you have a right to at least hiss. Because if you don't hiss, you will be finished by the people who are around, the children began to throw stones and the snake was on the verge of death. When he said, you told me that don't harm anybody, don't hurt anybody, be selfless. So I let them play with me. So he said, no, I didn't mean that. I said, don't harm or hurt. Don't bite because that will hurt or harm. But I didn't say don't raise your hood and hiss, because then that's a justified self-defense. Similarly, we have at every level a kind of justified self-defense. Even spiritually, when we are progressing, supposing in the urge of being selfless, we start saying that whoever is calling me anytime, I will go. There are people like that, extremely helpful people. But then you have no time to really go within and recuperate yourself and get connected, because that's in another movement. Both are required. If we just keep giving, a time will come when we'll have nothing left inside. So I'm first talking of these normal forms before we come to the ultimate. So there was a time when Sri Ramakrishna told one of his disciples, who was very busy sharing everything with everyone, and he said, jama kiya nahi kharcha karne laga. I mean, you have not accumulated and you have started spending. So ordinarily in life, there should be a good balance. There is a time activity which is given to accumulate the things that we want to share with people. If we don't do that, then we'll be just foolish. And even Sri Aurobindo, people often ask that why was he not meeting people and what was that isolation? Many people seeing him have started isolating themselves, thinking they are doing yoga. But Sri Aurobindo clarified. He said already the way he was writing letters, the way he was pouring his energies on the world, he said, if I come out, I'll be just eaten up. Who will leave him? He is not, you know, with mother it was very difficult because she's tremendous power. So even to come near her, but Sri Aurobindo is like Bholenath, imagine he is going out, he is capable of doing that. But if he comes out, nobody will, you know, everybody will be clinging to him, pulling him in every direction. Even with mother they used to do, pull her in so many directions. At one point the mother fell seriously ill. And then Sri Aurobindo was asked about the cause of the mother's illness. He said, because she just gives incessantly, that is her movement. She was just giving and giving and giving. This is before the 1926 event. And so much she was giving, she was just giving all of herself and taking upon herself everybody's burden. So she became seriously ill. Everybody's illness, everybody's problems, inner difficulty she was taking. So there is no doubt it's a very divine movement. But yet, even there, Sri Aurobindo immediately told her, stop the soup ceremony. Because, you know, people were just pulling at her vital and trying to. And she would give, because I am here for the divine work. She says that. And yet, Sri Aurobindo cautioned her that it's necessary for the larger good. You know, and I take this example with which this part we can leave. Now, there are scientists who discover now it's the vaccine. And there are people who spend a lifetime isolating themselves to discover something which will do good to the world. So I often give this example that supposing somebody wants to help people. Now, selflessness is a kind of help. It comes from the urge to help. So imagine that a person says that I want to help people. I see a lot of sickness and I want to help them. So you tell him, okay, you go and do your medicine in whatever, you know, allopathy, Ayurveda, homeopathy. He says, no, they'll take me time. I'm a people person, I want to help them right away. So what he'll be able to do? He will just go and do a little bit of help that is available to him from various sources. But if he goes to, if he isolates himself and takes to, you know, medical knowledge, proper medical knowledge, then for some time it will appear that he is away from people and is lost to people. But then he comes back more effectively and he has to keep updating his knowledge. You know, it applies in every field. You can't be saying that 24/7 I will keep on seeing people, because that's how people who do that, they are mostly motivated either with a strong, sometimes self-giving can be motivated by ego. There are people who will work for many hours and it gives them a big kick in the ego that, you know, I am working day and night. This is another kind of ego. So the snares of the ego, it uses even the door of so-called selflessness, because there is a lot of feedback you get from people. In doctors, it happens very often. Oh, you know, that doctor, he is available till night, 12 o'clock. Obviously, because maybe at home nobody bothers about him, and all the patients who come, they flatter. Doctor Saab, Doctor Saab, Doctor Saab. So Doctor Saab is so happy. See, his ego has many masks. The moment he comes home, you are a good-for-nothing guy. You don't take care of us. So he says, this is a better option. Why should I go home? And it, these are masks of selflessness. So first we must distinguish between masks of selflessness and true selflessness. Masks of selflessness means the person appears selfless, as if in service of people, but there is behind an ego, ambition, money, to gain power, something or the other is there. But if you see outside, it looks like, you know, the person is working so much. Or even there is a need to escape from a certain difficult environment. So people who are working a lot, workaholics, take it that, you know, something is not quite right at home. You can almost infer it with a fair degree of accuracy, because it helps you to escape from a difficult situation. So these are masks. But even when there is true selflessness is where you are really not thinking about yourself. You are doing it as a service. Now that's where the true self-giving starts. Service to whom? So when you give yourself, who is the giver and to whom it is being given? That's the question we must ask. Am I giving myself to a person's desires? That is not self-giving, that is giving in. Somebody whom you love and says, you know, you love me? Yes, I love you. Really you love me? Yes. Prove it. Tell me. I am ready to do anything for you. Go and kill that person. There are stories like that, no? Should one do it or not do it? Is that self-giving? No, it is not self-giving. It is called giving in. There is a difference between the two. So self-giving, one has to see to what it one is giving. If you give yourself at the altar of the ego of another person, so just as there are masks of selflessness where you are giving at the altar of your own ego, but wearing a facade of giving to community. Very common. Altruism, philanthropy, these are big masks. Oh, dekhiye kitne bade ye dani hai. Karna was wearing that mask and he became an instrument of Adharma. Everybody knows him as Danveer Karna. So there are masks of selflessness where you are feeding your ego, but it is appearing as selflessness. Similarly, there are masks where you are giving, but giving, feeding somebody else's ego. And Sri Aurobindo says, the ego has to be sacrificed, but only at the one true altar. And it is the divine. It is not to be sacrificed at the altar of another ego. Because I have to give myself, so you know, whatever my parents say, whatever my husband says, or whatever my wife says, because times have changed. Times have even changed for the whatever my child says, I must listen. Practice self-giving. That is not self-giving. That is giving in. So what is really self-giving? Self-giving involves two things. Who is the giver and to whom it is being given? Who is the giver means, that's beautifully described in the Gita. Is it the physical person who is giving? Mechanically giving? To one's own people you are giving, it has very little value, practically no value. Is the giver the vital ego? I am the giver. There are people who will give you initially. Be very careful. The net has started. They'll give you. After 1 month, the original mafia don, I keep giving this story, was set in motion by Duryodhana and Karna. So what did Duryodhana do? I make you Angraj Karna. It does not depend upon your social status. But behind it, there was a motive. He kept giving him. And Karna thought that such a wonderful friend. And when the time came, he said, you know, dude, fight against Arjuna. That's what I want you. Now he was already in the net. So there is a giving like that which is completely vital in nature. It will look like a complete self-giving. But there is behind it something which is concealed and you can't see it. A time will come when you will see it. By then sometimes it's too late. Of course it's never too late, but one should be careful that behind this giving There is something. It will look like, no, I have no expectation. But there is something which is there. Time will come when the expectation will start and be a huge expectation, because the giving was always behind with this. Sometimes people give, but they want you in return. So, nothing less than that. So, vital when it gives, it is always with expectation. There are some very rare moments where the vital can give completely. Shobhinda speaks of that. And that is something very beautiful. It's purely an emotional being who can give completely, lose everything, and not say an oof or ah. But that is very rare. If it happens, respect it. It is not yet divine, it's not yet the ultimate, but it prepares a person for something greater. If somebody has done like that, a true self-giving, only through the emotion. Why? Because it's so close to psychic. It cannot be done by anything else, because the emotional being is so close to the psychic, and the psychic is the only part which knows to give. There will be spontaneous self-giving, complete self-giving, with nothing in return, and that's something very beautiful. It will uplift this emotional being to any degree of height, prepare one directly for, at some point of time, giving to the divine, because one has done this phase of doing it with human beings. But do it without any expectation in return. It will come in one form or the other, one form or the other. But know that this is a yoga, you are, or a preliminary stage of yoga. And when one practices like that, it's perfectly fine. As he has said, to love without expectations, to give oneself without expectation. But in this giving, be careful that if somebody asks you for your soul, don't do it. There is a very interesting story that the mother recounts from the Bible. It's the story of Esau and Jacob. So in the story, it's like, a person is very hungry and he goes to meet somebody and he has a porridge. So he says, will you give me a porridge? So he says, what will you give me in return? He says, for this porridge, I can give you my birthright. It's okay. The mother says, story looks very deceptively simple, but birthright is the right of the soul. It is to evolve along a certain line to the divine. Nobody can ask that. Nobody can claim that. Only the divine has a sovereign claim. You can't even give it, by the way. It's not meant for anybody. But if one does that, supposing, for example, self-giving, does it mean that somebody says, oh, you love me so much, why don't you change your path? Why don't you change your goal? You have a high goal of the divine. I can't keep to that. But I have also a goal, a good goal. I want to, do some good to people. But come with me together. Should one do it or not do it? It is adharma if you do it. It will not only harm you, it will harm him. Why? Because he has done the ghor karma of diminishing somebody who is at the stature. So a person who demands, and if you give it to him, given, you are actually ending up harming. I remember a story of long back. There was two brothers, and they had, again, a lot of regard, and one of the brothers wanted to come to the ashram. The other brother had a problem. Why? Because if he goes to the ashram, he has to look after the parents. So it was a very selfish reason. He didn't want him to be here. And he goaded, the younger brother wanted to come to the ashram, and he was really devoted from childhood, and he was not married. So I said, okay, if you come here, I'll see how I can help you. But this elder brother, brainwashed, got married, and ultimately conceded. That's what happens in Indian families. So when he was going through this process, the elder one asked me, shouldn't he do this duty towards parents? I said, don't call him back. If you do it, it's not only about him. You are incurring a karma which you don't understand. You are pulling him back from his aspiration. Never do that. So no self-giving should be to that point where you sell your birthright. Why? Because you don't have a right to give this. See, there is one part in you over which the divine has a birthright, sovereign claim. You have to ask the divine, can I give it? Ask him and see what he replies. If he says, okay, yes, do it. There are people who have done it and suffered, We know the famous story of one of the great sadhaks here. For many years he remained. And one day he gave in to the impulse of this idea of Hindu-Muslim unity or the Indo-Pakistan Union. He left the ashram after many years, decades, and went away. And when he had come to do the yoga, Sri Aurobindo had told him only one thing. Don't shift your asana. What a profound thing. That is the goal. You can't do that. Self-giving stops there. You can give. Nature's elements are with the soul. But you cannot give your soul. That in its utter nudity belongs to the divine. Eventually even these should be given to the divine. But so then comes the next step. So the mind also gives. But mind gives based on these duties. I will give to this person, not that person. It tries to calculate. There is the mental way of giving. It is all right. It saves you from many issues. But it is also not complete self-giving. Complete self-giving is done only by the soul in man. So, but when the soul gives, how does it give? Supposing you are in love with someone, and it is only love which wants to give, there is no other movement. So, in love, you want to give yourself. So, what is the precaution you would take? Always remember, when you give anything to anyone, know that you are giving to the divine in that person. Keep reminding yourself, keep reminding, keep remembering. The moment you deviate from that, problem starts. So Sri Aurobindo gives that clue in the synthesis. He speaks of two stories. One is Yajnavalkya's famous story, we all know. One loves the wife, not for the sake of the wife, but for the sake of the self. One loves the child, not for the sake of the child, but for the sake of the self. So he says, as is the self, so is the love. So both ways now it applies. If your self is physical, vital, mental, then it is a giving in ignorance. It has its value, but we have already spoken about it. But when it is the psychic being, then it, when it gives, it doesn't give to a human persona. Psychic cannot do it. If you do it, it will feel sorry, unhappy. It will feel sad about the whole movement. Because the psychic cannot do it by its nature. And if you compel it, it will just leave and go away. You can't compel the psychic to do something which is not right. It can go sometimes, but there will be a deep inner suffering. There are people who do that, and then life is full of inner suffering. Because one has, sometimes the psychic can say, okay, I'll go through this extreme experience. There was a story of this lady whose name Sri Aurobindo had, Jyoti, not Jyoti Priya, she was a great yogini, but another who was very good. Very wonderful lady. And very good poems. She's opened up like this, started writing and all. Then she fell in love with someone, very beautiful lady. And then that much is okay. But then the person, you know, goaded her, why don't you come? And, you know, we'll be together, we'll do sadhana, all this. So eventually she left the ashram. This is when Sri Aurobindo is physically present. And went away. She suffered like anything. She went and realized what she has done. So after 2 years, she wrote back, I want to come back. Mother said, no, let her go through this experience. 40 long years. Almost like a beggar, she died. So one must know this part. Self-giving doesn't mean this. So still, while you are poised in the divine, yes, there are people with whom you relate and give freely. So there is a kind of impersonal giving. Like a flower gives itself. Give yourself. That's something beautiful. What you are giving is whatever you have received as a gift of grace, you are giving. You can give material gifts to those who need it. And if you have money, give emotional gifts to those who need it. If you have emotions in abundance, give intellectual gifts to those who need it. If you have the light and the clarity, give spiritual gifts to those who seek it, if you are capable of doing it. All these givings are very good, wonderful. They are a hierarchy. But if you say, I am going to give myself, so self-giving is the extreme where you are giving yourself. Be careful, it can only be done to the divine. And if at all you are moved to do it, see the divine in that person. Don't do otherwise. And that is what is there in Yajnavalkya's story. And another place, Sri Aurobindo makes it even clear. Very beautifully, he says. It's the chapter on self-consecration. So it's same thing, consecration. You're giving, giving, giving. So he says, to what extent this giving can go? He says that whatever be the gift you give, whoever the recipient, and whatever you receive from whosoever is giving, know that you are giving to the divine in that person, and it is the divine to whom it is being given. Then you are safe. Safe zone. So he says that then see what happens when you do it. One is there is no obligation to start with. Very practical. Second is he says something very beautiful. Then even if the immediate recipient rejects it, you made some nice, you know, food and gave to somebody because you love the person. One is you love the person. So you are waiting. When will he say nice food? Thank you so much. Doesn't say. What happens? You feel disappointed. So you are expecting second day, third day. Fourth day, something will blurt out. How is the food? Oh, it's nice. Good. Thank you. You feel happy. This is not what is meant by self-giving. So when you give to the divine, then Shobhinda says, even if the person rejects the immediate recipient, he says, this is a horrible food. But the divine has received it. And the divine gives you what you need. It's like sabri ke jhute ber. So, always the safety is refer everything to the divine. Whomever you love, it's beautiful. Love, to live, to love are sign of infinite things. Shobhinda's lines in Savitri. Love is a glory from eternity spheres. Love is man's lean on the absolute, and the natural movement of true love is to give. But be careful. What does this imply? This doesn't mean that give up your goal, give up your seeking. Because then any mask, any force of falsehood will start using another person. It's bad for the other person, no? Because he'll become an instrument of these forces. So forget about yourself. Because you love the person, for the person's sake, don't allow this. Because he will become an instrument of falsehood. And he will not realize it and try to snatch. Second is, when you give it to the divine presence within. You will see a great joy come when you have given. So initially, expectation will be there. Then time will come when it is you are free of expectation. Similarly, when it is being given, oh, I am the one. People give me so many things. Wow. So nice. It's not to you. It is to the divine. That's why when mother spoke of love, what did she write? With which we can close. Love is not sexual intercourse. Love is not the heart's hunger for affection. So what is love? She says, love is a mighty vibration coming from the supreme and going to the supreme. And only the few who are strong and wide can receive it and transmit it. So it is not I love you and therefore I give myself to you. It is the divine in me loving you, and it's not an intellectual process, mind you. You can't sustain it. The divine within me loves the divine in you. And such is the arrangement of life, of destiny, that today he has come to me in your form. And therefore I give myself to you, not to you, this person, this mask. That's what Savitri is about, conjugal love. But she says, not for my heart's hunger do I love Satyavan. That's what death tells her, puts her in that loop. Oh, I know you love, this love is nothing, it's a glands which are being secreted. And after, if Satyavan dies, love will remain. So I am doing a big mercy on you. If Satyavan remains, love will pass away. Why it passes away? When mother was asked about it, she said, because very few people, hardly anybody is ready to receive this force. After 1 month, 2 months, see what happens when there is love. You want to change yourself according to the person. But what happens after 1 or 2 months? I am doing so much. The other person doesn't even understand me. Why? Because vital was hiding. Now the vital says, this is too much. This is stop. But when somebody loves truly, then one says what Shobhinda said. Where I have loved once, I cease not from loving. You know for whom he wrote these lines? For his wife. People say, oh, he left her and came away. When did he leave her? He never left her. He looked after her inwardly with his spiritual consciousness throughout. And even after she passed away and took birth in a different body, he never left her. Yes, of course, you have to, that path, mission for which he has to come, he has to do that. That is too special. That cannot be abandoned. But he says that, you know, where I have loved once, I cease not from loving. When he came to know of her death, he says, I know, but I will always love her. This is love and self-giving. He watched over her progress. He watched over her death. He watched over her rebirth. He made sure that she came to the ashram and grew up into a beautiful sadhika. This is how the divine gives himself to creation. Doesn't give in to ignorance. When mother was asked, mother says at one place, when you say to the divine that you love me, therefore you must do what I ask you for and wish for, my reply is, because I love you, I will do for you what is good for you and good for your progress. Because I love you. I know one story of another sadhak and sadhika. You know, in ashram context, you know that people can be friends. And this friendship is, you know, like friends. Deep friendship, like you know, what outside would be like a marriage. But it's not marriage in that sense. It's not like trappings of society and all. But they are friends. They are like that. But something very beautiful, one person who was friendly to another person shared with me. And she was telling me that, you know, how one has to be, the line is so thin, both from ashram and both grew up and they both, whatever, fell in love with each other or felt for each other. And there's many friendships which have a sanction of the divine. So there was a sanction, obviously, and they carried on. So once man wanted to have some kind of a physical relation, which is not to be done in the ashram premise. So what do? Then she didn't know what to do. There are women who have a natural, you know, repulsion towards sexuality. Very high type of women. Much more common in women than in men. But rare, but very good. So then she didn't know, and suddenly she hears Sri Aurobindo's voice. He says, is it really necessary? She shared it personally with me. She's no more, so I can share it. Is it really necessary? Of course, she was sharing this experience to tell me something. Is it really necessary? And then it dropped off from her. No, this. I don't need to do this. And she had to convey this. And then whatever happened eventually, you know, they came back together. Because then you go through your own evolution. But I'll give you another example. Outside example. Now, there is a letter of Sri Aurobindo where he speaks of this ashram is a laboratory, as X has put it. Now, there is a background to that. There was a lady. This is not there in the collected works, but the letter, the question is there in the archives. And I know from very extremely reliable source who has seen it. So this lady asked, sent a letter that I had this physical thing with the husband. And that moment I had this experience. This experience is like the self. Is it true? How can I have it during such a process? Is it even possible? So Sri Aurobindo writes that the mother has already explained to you that it is possible and why it happened. And the example he gives is because you were in a state of utter abandon and self-giving where you actually gave to the divine in that person. The divine, if such be your will, with that state, even physical relations she had entered into. And she had the experience. Now you can't confabulate these things. It's not like you say, oh, okay, now let me do it with this idea. It doesn't work. It is a state of consciousness. You can't fool the divine. And she had the experience of the self. Precisely because she was in that state of utter abandonment. So how does it help? Because see, what is giving? Normally the divine presence is hidden under coats. Mental, vital, physical coats. They prevent us from seeing the divine. Divine is always there. All the time. Why don't we experience him? Because first Mr. Physical comes, he says, I don't know, divine people say, obscure consciousness. No, no, you sit for meditation and you'll realize it. Sits for meditation, says, I don't know, I feel sleepy. Gives up. The vital says, ah, I have heard there is a divine. What will he do for me? Will he give my child admission in school? So after some time, vital also walks away. The mind says, yes, I have heard about the divine, but where is the proof? I want convincing proof. So mind also doesn't help much. Now what happens when you give yourself? Suddenly all these layers are gone. So what you have, when all these nature denuded of itself, still uncovers God. It's not nothingness. That was the mistake that some of the ancient peoples, some of the yogis make. That you have the experience of nothingness because when you are in that state of utter giving. That is dangerous because nothingness can be the higher nothingness or it can be the inconscient. But if you have done it consciously with this idea that it is the divine to whom I am giving, and a time will come when there is nothing left, but this nothing will be everything. The omniscient, omnipresent witness for whom the Upanishad says, Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshushay bahya dosha eko vashi sarvantaratma nalipyate lokdukhena bahya. As the sun shines and in its light people do many things, it doesn't taint the sun. Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshushay bahya dosha. People are doing murdering under sunlight. That's why this is a broad daylight. Is the sun affected by it? No. So Atman is not affected. So if you are in that consciousness with that will that this is the true and there also to the divine, then suddenly when nature is stripped off, you will see God. That is the idea behind self-giving. So when in love we give ourselves with this idea to the divine, but again, it cannot be done by intellectualizing it. So for practice, the thing is, when you give, generally, keep in mind you are not giving to a human being, you are giving to the divine. Don't expect things in return. Practice it, it's very good training for the vital. It's perfectly fine, better than selfishness where one is only wanting. As she says, there are four stages of love. First is when you want to be loved. Second is when you get love and you give a little bit in return. Third is when you love but you want a return. Fourth is when you love, you don't want anything but you want acknowledgement. Go through these stages. Then in the fifth stage, all is love. But there the problem will be that where do I get love from? So she says, for all your needs and expectations, turn to the mother. Turn to the divine. You're feeling that, you know, somebody is not loving you. You're feeling pain, agony, anguish. Turn to her and say that thou art the source of all love. Fill me with your love. So much will flow that you won't know what to do with it. Turn to her for everything, all expectations, all needs. But when you give, give freely. So this is the process in practical life. And then always know this giving will never mean giving your birthright. That is the stop. The ego can be offered, but not the psychic being. Psychic being cannot be offered to a human ignorance. That is a fall. Psychic being will be offered only to the divine. So it's never at that expense. So this is in broad thing about self-giving. And rest comes with practice. It is not easy. The first thing is love should be there. Most of the time it's not love at all. Love is a mighty vibration. Only those who are very strong and wide in these parts. Weak vital cannot harbor love. It will immediately turn into possessiveness, jealousies, fears and all these things. The vital will immediately throw up these things. But if the vital is strong, then one can love and white. So these are all processes, not processes. These are ways. You can't do it as a process. It's a path. Love will come in your life, she says. Love unselfishly. Go through it. Love without selfishness. Love without wanting anything in return. Love in the true sense. Give but don't expect anything. Then she says after a while you will touch the principle of divine love. This is a real experience. But don't start looking for somebody whom you can love. So love has to come in life. And the sign that love has come into your life is you feel it here. It's not like, oh, the person is very good, good looking. That's not love. That's attraction. Oh, you're carried away by charm. How well he speaks and how well she speaks. That's not love. That's the mind getting admiring and getting attracted. But love is something which has no logic. It flows from the heart. The heart center opens. There's no logic behind it. And when it happens, when it comes, she says, go through it. And do it in this way. It is the emotional being which opens and flows. It could be affinity, it could be destiny, whatever it be. It's an ignorance one doesn't know. Don't color it with fantastic things. My soulmate has come. Nobody knows. But love has come. That's the only thing you can say. Those who are emotional, it tends to happen. So, let it flow like this. Okay? This is the answer, more or less in detail. Namaste. Thank you.